Hey, listener. Before we get started, there are a couple of things I need to point out about the podcast. First, this podcast is intended to serve as a study aid for students in the Texas Basic Peace Officer course and should not be used in place of classroom instruction. Second, you should not consider anything we discuss during the episodes as legal advice, and the opinions we express on the podcast are our own and are not representative of our employers or the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement. And finally, you should always consult your agency representatives and your county or district attorney's office before filing criminal charges based on anything you hear on the podcast. Are you a cadet in the Basic Peace Officer course in Texas? Are you an officer in another state planning to challenge the Texas Peace Officer licensing exam? If so, then this is the podcast for you. We are going through and breaking down the codified portions of the Basic Peace Officer course learning objectives to help you understand all the legal language. This is BPOC Basics. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast where we break down the learning objectives from the Basic Peace Officer course. I'm Jim McGregor, and with me is Amy Byram.
Yo.
And we are in Chapter 21, Sexual Offenses. We're going to start off in 2101 going over some definitions. So the first definition is deviant sexual intercourse. Deviant meaning different, not deviant meaning wrong. So deviant sexual intercourse means any contact between any part of the genitals of one person and the mouth or anus of another person, or the penetration of the genitals or the anus of another person with an object. Two, sexual contact means, except as provided by Section 2111 or 2112, any touching of the anus, breast, or any part of the genitals of another person with intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person. So, under sexual contact, I think it's important to note here that when we talk about the touching of any part of the genitals of another person with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person, that arousal or sexual gratification could be the gratification of the person being touched. It could be the gratification of the person doing the touching, or it could be a third party that's watching or observing this happen, right?
Yes.
So that's an important thing to understand, that sexual contact doesn't even necessarily have to involve, well, it involves the two people that the touching is occurring between, but the arousal or gratification doesn't necessarily have to involve the two people that are involved in the touching. Okay. Sexual intercourse means any penetration of the female sex organ by the male sex organ. And spouse means a person to whom a person is legally married under the family code or a comparable law of another jurisdiction. Okay, 2102, continuous sexual abuse of young child or disabled individual. In this section, child has the meaning assigned by Section 22011. And 22011, the definition of a child is a person younger than 17 years of age. So very important that you keep in mind that a child is somebody younger than 17 in this section.
And I'm going to hop in just for one quick second. In this whole section, all of the offenses involving children, they get a little complicated because several of them have different ages and age ranges of what constitutes a child. And so you need to really pay attention to that. And some of them are under 14, some of them are under 17, and they're all very different. And so pay really good attention to the definition of child in each of these statutes.
And everywhere. Everywhere in the penal code, the ages are, it's very frustrating. As a teacher for many, many years, I've always told cadets, it's like the legislature just, you know, put a bunch of ages in a Yahtzee cup and just shook them up and dumped them out on the table every time that they make a new law. And they just say, oh, I think a child will be, oh, let's just see, pour it out here on the table, under 14 or under 17. But in these cases here, for these laws, this law in particular, it's younger than 17. Okay. 2102.2, a disabled individual has the meaning assigned by 220.21. And as I go to 220.21, looking for the definition of a disabled individual, it means a person older than 13 years of age who by reason of age or physical or mental disease, defect, or injury is substantially unable to protect the person's self from harm or to provide food, shelter, or medical care for the person's self. A person commits an offense if, during a period that is 30 or more days in duration, I'd underline that, circle it, put a star next to it, however you're making your notes, 30 or more days in duration, a person commits two or more acts of sexual abuse, regardless of whether the acts of sexual abuse are committed against one or more victims. And at the time of the commission of each of the sexual abuse, the actor is 17 years of age or older, and the victim is a child younger than 14 years of age, regardless of whether the actor knows the age of the victim at the time of the offense or a disabled individual. Let me go over that one more time. This is complicated, folks. Pay close attention to these ages. During a period that is 30 or more days in duration, person commits two or more acts of sexual abuse, regardless of whether the acts of sexual abuse are committed against one or more victims, and at the time of the commission of each of the acts of sexual abuse, the actor, the person committing the crime, is 17 years of age or older, and the victim is a child younger than 14. Regardless of whether the actor knows how old the victim is at the time or a disabled individual, that doesn't matter the age of the disabled individual. For the purpose of this section, an act of sexual abuse means any act that is a violation of one or more of the following penal laws: aggravated kidnapping, if the actor committed the offense with the intent to violate or abuse the victim sexually; indecency with a child, if the actor committed the offense in a manner other than by touching, including touching through clothing, the breast of a child; sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault; burglary, if the offense is punishable under subsection D of that section and the actor committed the offense with the intent to commit an offense listed in subdivisions 1-4, sexual performance by a child, trafficking of persons under 20A02A3, 4, 7, or 8, and compelling prostitution. All right. Let's see. I'm reading. Anything here else, Amy, that we need to talk about in this law that's for testing purposes that would be important for them to know?
I don't believe so. There are several more subsections there, but I don't really think it's really relevant to what y'all are going to get tested over. So No, I think we've covered the meat and potatoes of it.
Yes, just extremely important, folks that are listening here, that you pay close attention here to these ages, particularly on this continuous sexual abuse of young child or disabled individual. The big hint here is in the title of the offense. Young child is a child younger than 14. And the continuous part of it is during a period that is 30 or more days in duration, they do it two or more times. All right, let's move on down to public lewdness, 20.07. A person commits an offense if the person knowingly engages in any of the following acts in a public place, or if not in a public place, a person is reckless about whether another is present who will be offended or alarmed by the person's act of sexual intercourse, act of deviant sexual intercourse, or act of sexual contact. So, public lewdness, easy way of remembering this is it takes two to be lewd. That's the way I remember that. You got to have two people, right? You can't have sexual intercourse by yourself because you got to have a male sex organ and a female sex organ. And an act of deviant sexual intercourse, if we go up and look at that definition again, right, you got to have two people to engage in that. And sexual contact, you've got touching going on there. So public lewdness is you're doing these acts in a public place. Or if you're not in a public place, so let's say you're at home, you're in your house, and you're engaging in one of these types of activities, either intercourse, deviant sexual intercourse, or sexual contact, but you are got the windows, you're in front of the window, and you got the curtains open, and people are walking down the street, and they can see you. That would also be public lewdness. Nobody wants to see that.
Nope.
No, they don't want to see that. Okay. Then let's move on to indecent exposure. 2108, a person commits an offense if he exposes his anus or any part of his genitals with intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person, and he is reckless about whether another is present who will be offended or alarmed by his act. So this one gets a little misinterpreted because the important part here is the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person for it to be indecent exposure. Because just exposing your anus or your genitals in a public place is disorderly conduct. But if you have no intent to arouse the gratify the sexual desire of anybody.
Right.
Right? But if you're doing so, like, this is a flasher.
Yes.
Right? You're somebody jumps out from behind the bushes with an overcoat on. That's the cliche image that people think of is
right.
Some guy hiding in the bushes, and he jumps out and exposes himself to women that are jogging or walking, pushing strollers, and the guy jumps out and exposes himself to them with the intent to arouse or gratify usually his own sexual desire. Because
yes.
I don't think very many flashers actually arouse the people that they're flashing. It's usually for their own personal gratification. But the person that's, going to the bathroom on the side of the highway and somebody can actually see their genitals as they're driving by, but they're not doing so with any intent to arouse anybody. They're just going to the bathroom. That's not indecent exposure.
Right. And along those same lines, they use the word he and his in this statute. That's not exclusive to the male gender only, anyone, of any gender can commit this offense, but you have to pay attention to the exact language of what has to be exposed for it to be an offense. And it's very body part specific. It says anus or any part of genitals. Right. And one thing that is not, and some people get confused on this when you're out working these calls, if a woman is walking around topless, women's breasts are not considered genitals. And so that is not covered by this. So if you have, it's a very common misconception. But this, you have to be very specific in the examples that you get with this as far as whether or not they're exposing a body part that's actually covered by or, you know, included under indecent exposure.
Right, because, you know, based on, we'll just say, common standards, somebody might be sunbathing at a hotel swimming pool, and this person might be wearing a rather skimpy bathing suit or revealing bathing suit.
Yes.
Tanning, and some other patrons at the hotel might be out there with their young children or something, and they might take offense and might call the police and say that person's swimwear is indecent. And just because that this other patron at the hotel or at a water park claims that that's indecent doesn't necessarily mean that it's indecent exposure. You got to be familiar with the terminology in the law, not what the caller or the complainant claims is indecent.
Exactly.
Very good. I'm glad you brought that up. All right, moving ahead. And there are, I just want to point out, there are other laws in Chapter 21 that we're skipping over because they're not in the learning objectives. We're doing that intentionally. We're not ignorant of the fact that there are laws we're not covering. So if those laws do become part of the learning objectives, we will actually go back and cover those at a later date. So we're skipping ahead to 21.11, indecency with a child. A person commits an offense if, with a child, I would underline it, highlight it, put a circle around it, younger than 17 years of age, whether the child is of the same or opposite sex, and regardless of whether the person knows the age of the child at the time of the offense, the person engages in sexual contact with the child or causes the child to engage in sexual contact or with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person, exposes the person's anus or any part of the person's genitals, knowing the child is present, or causes the child to expose the child's anus or any part of the child's genitals. It is an affirmative defense to prosecution under this section that the actor was not more than 3 years older than the victim and of the opposite sex, did not use duress, force, or a threat against the victim at the time of the offense, and at the time of the offense was not required under Chapter 62 Code of Criminal Procedure to register for life as a sex offender, or was not a person who under Chapter 62 had a reportable conviction or adjudication for an offense under this section.
And one quick note on B1 that you just read that says it's an affirmative defense that the actor was not more than 3 years older than the victim and of the opposite sex. That's in reference to what you've probably heard commonly called statutory rape. Legally, it's a defense if the two, basically that's teenage dating. Like older teenage dating is what that is. And if they were actually boyfriend, girlfriend in a dating relationship and they were, you know, 3 years apart or less, then that is a defense. Again, like with number two, they did not use any kind of force or threat. So that's what that means.
So this is kind of an antiquated affirmative defense because
yes.
If they are of the same sex and in a relationship,
yes,
then this affirmative defense would not qualify?
Yeah. Basically, the code hasn't really caught up with current times, and I'm sure that's going to change in the future. I also am sure that's where a lot of discretion is exercised by the prosecutors that handle these cases. If they know that the facts are that these people were of the same sex and they were in a consensual legal relationship, then, you know, obviously that's going to be considered. So,
yeah, just an example of how the code is antiquated in some circumstances where laws don't necessarily get changed until they get challenged.
Exactly.
So, glad you pointed that out. Under B1, it is an affirmative defense of prosecution under this section that the actor was the spouse of the child at the time of the offense. So if they're married, then this doesn't apply. And in this section, sexual contact means the following acts: if committed with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person. Any touching by a person, including touching through clothing, of the anus, breast, or any part of the genitals of a child, or any touching of any part of the body of a child, including touching through clothing, with the anus, breast, or any part of the genitals of a person. Okay. Next is improper relationship between educator and student, 2112. An employee of a public or private, primary or secondary school commits an offense if the employee engages in sexual contact, sexual intercourse, or deviant sexual intercourse with a person who is enrolled in a public or private, primary or secondary school at which the employee works, holds a position described by Section 21003A or B in the Education Code, regardless of whether the employee holds the appropriate certificate, permit, license, or credential for the position. And if you go to the 21.003 Education Code, essentially it's saying that they are a teacher or have any type of supervisory position in an educational setting over a child. And engages in sexual contact, sexual intercourse, or deviant sexual intercourse with a person the employee knows is enrolled in a public or private, primary, or secondary school other than a school described by Subdivision 1, or a student participant in an educational activity that is sponsored by a school district or public or private, primary, secondary school, if the student enrolled in a public or private or primary secondary school are the primary participants in the activity, or engages in conduct described by Section 33021, which is online solicitation of a minor, with a person described by Subdivision 1, or a person the employee knows is a person described by Subdivision 2A or B, regardless of the age of that person. It's a second-degree felony. It's an affirmative defense to prosecution under this section that the actor was the spouse of the enrolled person at the time of the offense, or the actor was not more than 3 years older than the enrolled person, and at the time of the offense, the actor and the enrolled person were in a relationship that began before the actor's employment at the public or private, primary or secondary school. And if conduct constituting an offense under this section also constitutes an offense under another section of this code, the actor may be prosecuted under either section or both sections. So if they're engaging in some type of sexual relationship and it's a violation of improper relationship between educator and student, but it's also a sexual assault because of the age difference between the two individuals and the person's a child, this actor can be prosecuted under both sections.
One thing, too, on this that you'll notice when you read through this is the language on this one is a lot more general than most of the other child-related offenses because it's not age-specific as far as how old the child is. Really, with the exception of the affirmative defense, where it is a defense if there's only 3 years difference and they're in a dating relationship. Other than that, all it says is a person who is enrolled in a public or private school.
Right, they could be an adult, legal.
Absolutely.
They could be 18, and it's still against the law.
Absolutely.
While
so that's
they're enrolled
one interesting
in this
thing
school.
Here.
This is important, I think, not necessarily for learning objectives and testing purposes, but, you know, once you're a peace officer and you're out working, this is important for you. Under D, the name of a person who is enrolled in a public or private primary or secondary school and involved in an improper relationship with an educator, as provided by A, may not be released to the public and is not public information under the government code. So if you arrest a teacher for being involved in an improper relationship with a student, you cannot release the name of the student. That's considered not public information.
Well, and along those lines too, we're not gonna get too much into the weeds on this, but you will come across that a related situation with many of the offenses, potentially all of the offenses involving children, in any of these sexual offenses, the child or the parent of the child has the option of creating what is called a pseudonym, basically making up a fake name that can be used in the reports to protect the identity of the child. And that's because they're juveniles and we want to protect them because of their age. So you'll come across that a lot when you're out in the field, and that's going to be situational. Each of your agencies are going to have policies for how you handle that. That's something that you'll have to learn through your field training.
Okay, good. Moving on to 2115, invasive visual recording. In this section, female breast means any portion of the female breast below the top of the areola. Intimate area means the naked or clothed genitals, pubic area, anus, buttocks, or female breast of a person. Changing room means a room or portioned area provided for or primarily used for the changing of clothing and includes dressing rooms, locker rooms, and swimwear changing areas. And promote has the meaning assigned by section 4321. And going to promote in 4321, that means to manufacture, issue, sell, give, provide, lend, mail, deliver, transfer, transmit, publish, distribute, circulate, disseminate, present, exhibit, or advertise, or offer, or agree to do the same. So pretty much make available in any way. A person commits an offense if, without the other person's consent and with the intent to invade the privacy of the other person, the person photographs or by videotape or other electronic means records, broadcasts, or transmits a visual image of an intimate area of another person if the other person has a reasonable expectation that the intimate area is not subject to public view. Photographs or by videotape or other electronic means records, broadcasts, or transmits a visual image of another in a bathroom or changing room, or knowing the character and content of the photograph, recording, broadcast, or transmission, promotes a photograph, recording, broadcast, or transmission described by subdivision 1 or 2. An offense under this section is a state jail felony. And if conduct that constitutes an offense under this section also constitutes an offense under any other law, the actor may be prosecuted under this section or the other law. For the purposes of B2, a sign or signs posted indicating that the person is being photographed or that the visual image of the person is being recorded, broadcast, or transmitted is not sufficient to establish the person's consent under that subdivision. So let's go back and look at B1, because I think there's this law is a little vague. I don't think it was intentionally meant to be so, but there's some questions here in this law. So photographs or by videotape or other electronic means records, broadcasts, or transmits a visual image of an intimate area of another person if the other person has a reasonable expectation that the intimate area is not subject to public view. So when we look at intimate area, the naked or clothed genitals, pubic area, anus, buttocks, or female breast of a person. So if I go out and take a picture of somebody or video of somebody, and it's one of those areas, and I take that picture and I transmit that visual image, then that's an offense.
And actually, it's an offense even if you don't transmit it. Even if you just, if you record it or if you take a picture of it, you've committed the offense.
Committed the offense there. Now, that's pretty straightforward. But where it gets confusing is number two. So we see all the time people posting images on Facebook or Instagram, people taking selfies in the bathroom, in the mirror, posting them on their social media pages. Would that include another person that's in that bathroom if they didn't consent? Now, not a person actually using the restroom, but another person that's just standing in the bathroom there. I don't think that's the intent behind the law.
No.
But it says that, right? Photographs or by videotape, an image of another in a bathroom or changing room. So, I mean, I think that that's where the law is written, and it's kind of vague in that, I mean, obviously, if you're posing with another person in the mirror in the bathroom, that's with your consent. But
right. If
another person's standing in line waiting to have access to the toilet and you're taking a selfie and that person's in the mirror, in the reflection behind you, they didn't consent to that picture being taken, but they're not in a state of undress or anything. That I don't think that's the spirit of this law, but that's what the letter of this law says.
Well, no,
says,
but I mean, that wouldn't count anyway. If none of their intimate areas are exposed, then that wouldn't qualify. Well, actually,
it doesn't say that though.
It doesn't. Yeah, you're
so
right.
That's where we've had this. Yeah. People have asked this question in the past, so that's where I wanted to get your legal opinion on that, because on two, it doesn't specify that it has to be an intimate area like it does in number one. So again, I think that's an oversight when this law was written.
I think it is number two,
it's just, it does say if you take a picture of somebody in a bathroom, then it's a felony. But I think that they meant maybe they were actually using the bathroom, not just standing in a bathroom. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out only because, you know, is it the spirit of the law or the letter of the law issue there? Just be aware of that, listener, that might be something you need to run by your prosecutor's office or your county attorney's office if you have something like this occur in your jurisdiction and, you know, if you have a complainant, and, you know, then that's definitely something you need to look into.
Well, and honestly, the detectives that will be handling, that you will be giving these cases to in your agencies will typically, unless they're brand new, they will have a pretty good idea of what the DA's office will accept. And so you can typically go to them whenever you're writing up the report and say, hey, you know, does this qualify as this? And that's usually a good place for y'all to get your information to.
Sure. But another perfect example there of that the laws aren't always perfectly written and there's always some ambiguity of possible whenever we're reading these.
And you will come across a lot more than just the ones we're going to talk about. It's really kind of disappointing how badly written and badly amended that these laws are over the years, but we're stuck with them. And so, you know, like he said, just whenever you have a question and you come across one of these situations, and you will, just reach out to the DA's office in your county and they'll help you out.
Okay, we're going to move on to 2117, which, depending on which version of the learning objectives you're looking at, it's labeled 2116 in the learning objectives as of July or June of 2022. But if you're looking at this after that date, that may have been revised. But in the law, it's 2117, voyeurism. A person commits an offense if the person, with the intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of the actor, observes another person without the other person's consent while the other person is in a dwelling or structure in which the other person has a reasonable expectation of privacy. So this is like a peeping Tom, right? A person's looking inside of another person's house or some type of a building with the intent to arouse the sexual desire of the actor. It's a Class C misdemeanor. It's a Class B misdemeanor if it is shown on the trial of the offense that the actor has previously been convicted two or more times of an offense under this section. It's a state jail felony if the victim was a child younger than 14 years of age at the time of the offense. If conduct that constitutes an offense under this section also constitutes an offense under any other law, the actor may be prosecuted under this section, the other law, or both. Now, when we get to disorderly conduct, we're going to see that there's another law under disorderly conduct that very closely matches voyeurism. So, and we'll talk about this in much more detail when we get to disorderly conduct. But that pretty much wraps up chapter 21. Do you have anything you want to add?
I don't believe so. One small thing on the voyeurism statute, I know a lot of people do not have window coverings on their windows in their homes. And at night, you can obviously see in to people's homes that way, and most people don't really care. So what this statute is really talking about is if you have someone walking down the sidewalk and they are looking into your house that way, that's not going to be considered voyeurism. If someone is on your property, literally nose against the glass, looking inside your house, close up, that's what this is really focused on. Because sometimes you'll get called out, like on some of the other offenses, and the callers will be claiming, oh, this peeping Tom, this and that. And as long as you know, you'll know the difference in what actually constitutes an offense if you pay attention to kind of the language.
And you would also have the requirement to prove intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of that actor.
Exactly.
The person that was looking through the window.
Exactly.
And if you can't prove that they were, they were attempting to arouse or gratify the sexual desire, then it's going to be difficult to charge them with voyeurism.
And in all honesty, that is depending on the facts you have, kind of a hard thing to prove. It depends on the circumstances of how you found the person and what was actually happening. But proving intent to arouse or gratify,
most likely would be an indecent exposure situation going on where you caught them in the act of some type of indecent exposure going on, and then they were also looking in the window.
Exactly. I mean, if you catch someone I mean, I won't get into detail, but if you catch someone trying to pleasure themselves or something along those lines, that's going to be very clear evidence of intent to arouse or gratify. But if you don't catch them in that, in an act like that, then you kind of have to be, you have to think outside the box. Because sometimes, like I said, it sounds pretty common sense, but sometimes it's kind of hard to prove.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Join us next time when we jump into chapter 22.